You're listening to Carrie Lutz's Financial Survival Network, where you get valuable information you just can't find anywhere else. To thrive in today's trying times, you need the Financial Survival Network, now more than ever. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and get your free newsletter and gift. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.
And welcome. You are listening to watching the Financial Survival Network. I'm Carrie Lutz. Today is 11/29/21. Well, we saw a real Black Friday event last Friday. Market losing 1,100 plus points. The Dow, that is. Everything was down on huge volume on a holiday, no less, where the B-team traders were out there. The plunge protection team were barely recuperating from their turkey-induced comas the day before. There was just nobody left to stop it. And what happens when all of the PPT, all the minders go on holiday? Well, they won't let this happen again. I guarantee you that. But let's find out more about it. Our good friend DollarCollapse.com, John Rubino's here. And John, the ferocity of the decline on Friday was pretty earth-shattering, wasn't it?
Hey, Carrie. Yeah, that was dramatic. Wow, especially for the day after Thanksgiving. But two things about it. One is that when a market is this overvalued, falls like that are to be expected. You know, we'll see much bigger drops in the stock market as we work out today's overvaluation at some point in the future. The other thing is that there was a cause for the market tanking on that day. And it was that there's a new virus out there and everybody was really spooked by it. You know, already last week, a lot of countries were shutting their borders to foreign travelers, you know, doing the whole thing that they did back in 2020. You know, they were starting it up again. And that legitimately spooked the markets dramatically. And the reason that they're back up today, besides the plunge protection team showing back up and buying with government money, is that a lot of the people who are experiencing this new virus are saying it's not a big deal. You know, it's not a super serious one. Because there's one guy that came out and he was the head of a big health organization. And he was saying what he's afraid of is a virus variant that's worse than Ebola, you know, and spreads like the flu. And somewhere further down in the article, it said, well, there's no proof of anything like that or no evidence of anything like that existing in the world right now. But this guy, you know, that got the headline because he said that, you know, and that's what spooked the market, that people thought, oh, my God, here we go again. It's 2020. We're all going to lock down. We're going to have, you know, that kind of thing. And that's looking less and less likely as people get a grip on the new threat, you know, and recognize that people just aren't going to go on lockdown no matter what. You know, that's just not going to happen.
We already have riots. You know, it's funny. I hate to play the conspiracy theorist because there probably are multiple variants out there, some of which could be quite deadly. However, isn't it the perfect setup on a Friday where you know that all the gatekeepers are away? The B team, not even the B team, is at the trading desks at the big banks. The D team and the E team are there. The trainees, who are barely out of diapers, are watching the workstations. And it hits on the most advantageous day to knock the stuffing out of the markets. Now, one of two things, orchestrated perhaps, or perhaps the algorithms got spooked by a whole bunch of indicators, because the, you know, on these Friday after Thanksgiving and Friday after Christmas holiday weekends, the volume's usually extremely thin. So to trip those indicators to make the algos dump isn't that difficult, even if it's not deliberate. And that could just lead to the cascade that we had on Friday. It's fascinating to think about this because the timing is just too good, John.
Yeah, well, this is on a much bigger scale, kind of analogous to how gold is chugging along just fine in the Asian markets. Then at 4 a.m. when there's nobody anywhere paying attention to it, a big order, a sell order comes in and knocks it down by $20. this was that on a much bigger scale. And yeah, you, if you're a cynic, you could say that this is the monetary authorities of the world telling the markets, listen, you stick with us, you do what we say, or this could happen anytime, right? You know, we'll knock it down, we'll buy it back up, you know, so you won't lose any money, but you know, we could do this anytime we want to. So stay in line. Not, I wouldn't be surprised if that was actually the truth, although I have absolutely no proof that anything like that is true.
Same here. I'm speculating. I'm doing what the internet does best, stirring up rumors and making you believe that rumors are truth, and you could take it for what you want. But all I'm saying is, if there was a certain group of people that had the power to do something like this, man, day after a holiday in the U.S. would be perfect day to do it, because you got low volume. We already have had deteriorating volume, which means the market, one of the reasons it's been so easy to manipulate by the big money. Another reason, like you wrote in your notes here, is that we've seen more money go into the markets in the past year than in the past 20 combined. And that is, you know, as you say, a sell signal, but it's also, you know, as a result, indirectly a sell signal, directly a sign of a market peak.
Yeah. If anybody was wondering where all those stimmy checks ended up going, apparently they and all the other, you know, the corporate welfare and the super low interest rates and all the rest, a lot of it went into the stock market. Like you said, 20 times as much money flowed into equities in the past year than in the past 20 years. So that explains the wild overvaluation right now, because people are basically buying with money, you know, like house money. They have so much extra money and they're just throwing it at whatever. And so a lot of it went into equities, pushed equities up to record high prices, record high valuations by any measure you want to use. And that's a recipe for disaster if another amount of money comparable to last year's doesn't flow into equities in the next year. You know, if we don't keep this up, then we go back to valuations that are more consistent with previous funds flows. So we've got the Fed talking about tapering right now, and inflation really high, which has all the governments of the world spooked. By the way, let's talk about Germany. Don't let me get away from Germany here. But that's a recipe for tightening out there, you know, rising inflation and central banks starting to figure out how to scale back monetary ease and everything. And so that's not conducive to big bull markets in equities at a time when equities are wildly overvalued. So this could be a really choppy, you know, volatile year in which Friday's action just starts to look like the new normal. Now, about Germany, this is a big part of the inflation story out there, because Germany has a history almost within living memory of hyperinflation. In the early 1920s, their currency basically just collapsed. You see all those pictures of people dumping wheelbarrows full of cash into a furnace to keep warm, or taking suitcases full of cash to the store to get bread and milk, stuff like that. You know, that happened to them within their great grandparents' memory, and they heard about it. And so they're more spooked by the concept of inflation than most other people. Well, their inflation is at a modern record high of 6% right now. And so the question becomes, how much further does this have to go before Germany, given what we know about their cultural memory, cracks and either just pulls out of the Eurozone or demands higher interest rates or goes the other way and says, look, you know, we're going to make a clean break with our history and we're just going to accept higher inflation going forward. Either one of those things is potentially catastrophic for the financial system. And either one of them is kind of reasonable to picture Germany doing, because those are their only two choices. They have to choose one. So if the alternative is the other, then the first one seems like a reasonable possibility. So we'll see. But Germany might be a big part of the story going forward, just because they're in such an interesting place culturally and financially right now.
Yeah, it seems like just yesterday they were taking wheelbarrows full of marks to go buy bread, and then they come out and the wheelbarrow's gone, right? Yep. money scattered all over the sidewalk. You know, one of the best performing assets over the past several years was the Zimbabwe currency that hyperinflated, because all those trillion-dollar bills have now become collector's items, and they're selling on eBay for between $10 to $20, John. I have a good friend, Scott, who uses them as business cards. He stamps his name on it, right? I've got one, too, in my my wallet. Scott stamps his name and address and contact info on them, and he passes them out as business cards, and he bought, like, I don't remember, like a couple thousand of them for 10 to 20 cents a piece on the internet. And now they're worth money. So funny. Yeah, mine is less collectible. It's only 100 million Zimbabwe, whatever they were, bolivars. Oh, you know what? I take it back. Mine is 100 million bolivar from Venezuela. But the Zimbabwe ones are in demand, and so this could be the ultimate revenge of hyperinflation. That everything that's worthless is worth a fortune again eventually, right?
Yeah. Here, Kerry, check it out. $100 trillion.
$100 trillion.
Zimbabwe.
Yeah. A few of those floating around. I just can't find them since my move. But now that I know they're worth money, I have to go look for them. You can't toss the things, but that's the ultimate irony. And yes, Germany, more than any other modern country, it was a modern advanced country in Europe in the 20s, and they hyperinflated. There are a lot of reasons we're not going to get into, but country's never been the same. So when we look at things that are worth money, though, how does the price of gold go down when the quantity of money keeps going up? Really, geometrically, it makes no sense.
Well, you know, gold is still in an intermediate term bull market here, because its low price in this cycle was $1,000-ish US. So it's still heading up. It's just been range bound lately. So it's not really down in terms of its current trend. It's just kind of sort of in the middle of its range, and the range is kind of sort of pointing up, but just not dramatically. But yeah, you would think that inflation of 6% would give us gold of $3,000 an ounce, and it still will. But my theory right now is that, well, two things. One is the recent decline in gold's prices, because the financial markets were disappointed that Jerome Powell gets to stay as the head of the Fed, because he's not easy enough. You know, this guy presided over inflation going from 2% to 6% while the money supply was inflating at the fastest rate in American history. And the financial markets are disappointed because that guy is not enough of an easy money central bank chair. So gold apparently had gone up some in anticipation of him getting pushed aside for this woman on the Fed who is like UBI, modern monetary theory, straight down the line, you know, who is just, you know, yeah, just crazy by our terms. And when it turns out that just regular hyperinflation guy Powell gets to stay, that took a lot of the speculative pop out of gold that had happened in the, you know, the weeks prior to that. But you know, gold is still pretty close today. What is it, 1790-ish, something like that? That's not far from 1800, which is kind of the middle of its trading range. And it's a really good place for a lot of the gold miners, because at this level, they make good money selling their gold. They're generating free cash flow. They're going to raise their dividends. By the way, you know, as a somebody who's heading into the stage of life where income matters more than capital gains, the gold miners, the big ones, are actually pretty good income stocks now, because they're generating free cash flow. Their dividend yields are already, in some cases, 2 or 3%. And it's highly likely that they'll raise their dividends going forward. So these are now, you know, retired guy income stocks like Newmont and Barrick and Agnico Eagle. which adds a new dimension to gold stock investing. You know, it didn't used to be that you were going to get any income from anything that was on the precious metals side of the spectrum. Now you can actually earn more than a bank account while owning something that is basically denominated in money, you know, in real money, in gold. So I think the big gold miners have suddenly become a lot more interesting.
And by extension, the juniors, the mid-tier, and the juniors will become more interesting. It just galls me, John, when I get a better return on a used car sitting in my garage than I get on the gold sitting up wherever it is, in whatever place I put it, if I can remember one day. You know, why should used cars be returning more than precious metals? Would you explain that to me?
Well, two or three things are happening out there now that aren't including gold and silver. Right now, it's just a general bubble market. Things that are hot are tending to spike. But it's mostly risk on kinds of assets where, you know, you're expecting massive capital gains and that's why you buy them. With used cars, it's supply chain disruptions where there aren't enough microchips to make new cars anymore. Therefore, used cars have gotten a lot more relatively valuable because they might be the only thing you can get when you need a car. So their prices are way up. Same thing, you know, with houses where people are just panic buying houses now because they're afraid there won't be one when the time comes. Well, that is an inflationary psychology that is turning into an inflationary pathology. Yeah. Once people see this stuff happening in enough parts of their lives, they put the pieces together and realize that it's societal. It's not just their life. It's gotten very weird lately. And at that point, they start acting accordingly. And one of the things people do when they conclude that the world is inflationary now is they buy precious metals. So gold and silver have their parabolic runs. You know, their 1978, 1979 runs still ahead of them. And, you know, it could be pretty soon with inflation doing what it's doing right now. I mean, calculated the same way that it was back in the 1970s, it is now as high as it was back in the 1970s. So we're not far from a psychological point at which the market just concludes that everybody wants to be in precious metals and everybody tries to get through the same exit at once and they can't, you know, and then you get that straight up move.
Yeah, it's just the price of everything. I'll admit, I partly bought my house because I figured, I know this inflation's coming. I know there's nothing that's going to stop it. And if I don't get in now, I'm just going to get in later at 10 or 15 or 20% higher, which is exactly what happened. You know, it's a lot easier to predict the inflationary spiral up than it is when prices stabilize. And I think the most useful information that we can give, John, to anybody who's listening or watching the show is inflation is a real opportunity to make a ton of money, all right, if you get in at the right time of the cycle. And I've been fortunate prior times in my life and so far in this time that made money just being in on the cycle. And you don't have to be smart. You just have to have assets that generate income that you can leverage. If you can do that, that's the only secret you need to make money during an inflationary period.
Don't just survive, thrive. The Financial Survival Network.
American Eagle Gold is focused on exploring for a world-class gold deposit on its flagship property, Golden Gate, located in the Cortez Trend next door to Barrick Gold and Newmont Mining's Gold Rush and Cortez Mine. They have produced over 27 million ounces of gold. The company plans to drill and advance its relatively unexplored property and continue to focus on acquiring and advancing gold projects in the area. Vice President of Exploration Mark Bradley was at the helm of the team that discovered and defined Gold Rush and has spent the better part of 30 years working on the Cortez Trend. American Eagle trades under the symbol AE on the TSX Venture. For more information and to sign up for notifications, go to AmericanEagleGold.ca.
This is the Financial Survival Network, the information you need to thrive now more than ever.
Yeah. Well, actually, to go back to the gold and silver stocks for a second, because they're things that do tend to do great in inflationary periods once the inflation really gets going. But Rick Rule tends to say that you don't actually have to spend a lot of time analyzing gold and silver stocks in order to get most of the benefit from them, because the big guys that tend to do really well when people start pouring into the market. So you don't have to take the chance and put in the effort of learning about junior miners and mid-tier miners, even if you don't want to. You can just buy a handful of the big guys, and then you'll get most of the gains that you would get if you were, you know, a hardcore analyst who was, you know, going through the balance sheets and the income statements of 50 different mining stocks. You know, you would make more if you do that well, but not all that much more than if you are just in the big streaming royalty companies and a handful of the really senior miners. So that's a much simpler proposition for most people. And you know, it still works. It's still a place to be in an inflationary environment.
Yeah. And you and I, we had lengthy discussions back when this whole situation started and they started giving out free money, that inflation was the only possible outcome, meaning decreased purchasing power of your fiat currency dollars. It had to happen, right? There was no other way. And you and I had the discussion a number of times, John, when copper started going up, that this is not a reaffirmation that the economy is going to be great. It is an inflation reaction. And you know what? All those geniuses who get people to buy stuff that's basically worthless or becomes worthless over time, they were wrong. We were right.
Well, you know, the buy the dip guys are still right currently, right? You know, they're if you'd followed their advice and just bought the hot assets, you'd have done very, very well. The problem is that's going to end at some point in a really catastrophic way. So unless you get out the day before, a lot of the money that you're making right now in NFTs and cryptos and even Apple and Tesla stock and things like that, those things, but I'm short Tesla, by the way, again, so full disclosure. But
falling knives.
Yeah.
Juggle them and flip them in the air 50 feet. Yeah. Point down, man. I don't know.
Yeah.
But obviously,
well, it's a valuation thing, not a quality of products thing. But the stuff that will make money after the overvalued stuff all blows up is the thing you should be looking at this point in the cycle. You know, pass up the last 20% or whatever in the bubble markets and get positioned for the thing that's going to go up by 500% when the bubble bursts. And, you know, we are so far into this bubble that that I think you should be totally doing that now instead of chasing high-flying whatever.
Yeah, because the high flyers could be the falling knives now. Look, Tesla, love their products, love their CEO. I mean, hey, we should talk about this, John. We haven't talked about it, but Elon Musk selling off billions of dollars in stock based on a Twitter poll that he had. It's like, should I sell 10%? Yes. So he's selling it, and maybe that's the ultimate indicator of a market top, when the CEO of the most high-flying company on Wall Street, perhaps that it's ever known, but or maybe not ever known, but pretty close. You know, it's kind of, it became a trillion-dollar company faster than any other company in history. When the CEO sells 10% of his holdings and everybody's cheering him on, maybe that was the ultimate. The other thing is that the insider buy to sell ratio has been out of whack for months. For 6 months, the sales have eclipsed the purchases by many, many times. And maybe that's another indication that the dam is about to burst.
Well, actually, I would disagree with both of those, really, because Elon Musk had a huge tax bill.
I know.
And he probably didn't have enough cash to cover it. So his only choice was to sell Tesla stock. And then when a stock is really going up, the insiders do tend to take a little bit of profit. You see selling on the way up. It's when the selling is overwhelming, then you look back on it and say, oh, yeah, that's where. And I don't know whether that's where it is with Tesla, but I think if the market starts behaving in a way that makes last Friday's collapse look like the new normal, which is what always happens with wildly overvalued markets, then something like Tesla, even if it, you know, it's a good company, it's making, you know, revolutionary products, but if it's selling at 1,000 times earnings, it's going to go down. It can go down to 200 times earnings and still be highly valued. So that's probably what happens to even the high quality, high flyers in this kind of market. You know, Amazon went down by 90% in 2000. And so did a lot of other really high quality tech stocks. And I kind of think something like that is coming. And here's the scenario most easily understood where it comes from. And that is, you know, inflation stays hot. The bond markets decide that it would be crazy to own bonds in a market where inflation is 6% and bond yields are 0.5% or whatever. And the bond market tanks, that pushes up long-term interest rates, that tanks stocks. And then we get something like last Friday, only a month of last Friday's. And, you know, that's how other bubbles have all ended. So that's not an exotic prediction. That's just a replay of 2000 or a replay of 2008. That's coming again. And we can't know when, but we're at valuation levels where it sounds imminent.
Well, the good news is that there isn't physically much of Wall Street left. And most of the buildings that are built today, the windows are sealed. So don't have to worry about people jumping out of buildings on Wall Street anymore, because there's nobody there. And the buildings that are left, the people that are working there, they can't open the windows anyway. So we're safe as far as that goes.
Carrie, okay, we're safe from falling stock traders, but I think a lot of more of it will be fentanyl overdoses and maybe death by self-driving car, where you take your Tesla and just put it on the freeway and turn on the autopilot and just sit back until whatever happens, happens.
Yeah, you take your Tesla, you drink a fifth of Jack, and you pass out behind the wheel, and you leave it to the Elon gods to get you home safely in full self-driving, right?
And, you know, on your freeways, Carrie, I don't think that would work. So you be careful with your Tesla, right?
Yeah, you know, I read an alarming statistic. In Florida, there are more than 200,000 accidents reported yearly. Those are accidents bad enough for the cops to come, all right? Which means that it's somewhere around the 600 accidents per day on the highways, which is like worse than any other state.
Yeah, I've driven down there. I find that statistic very believable, but it's just two groups of people. It's the 85-year-old retirees driving their big road boats and at below the speed limit. And then Cuban guys in Maseratis driving at 30 miles above the speed limit, and they're both on the same road together, you know? So that's where the trouble comes from.
It can be frightening for sure. Well, that is it for today. We were going to talk about soccer players keeling over. It's been like a bunch of them. They don't know why. We're not saying, we're not rumor mongering here. This is a fact. These soccer players are keeling over.
Yeah. And this is something obviously we have to be really careful about, because we don't want you banned from YouTube. But yeah. It is something that's in the news now, and that it's something like they're keeling over at a rate that's five times the normal rate, because, you know, people faint on hot days playing strenuous sports every once in a while. That kind of stuff happens. But now it's at five times the normal rate. And who knows why? You know, nobody has an explanation for it, Carrie.
I don't have an answer here. It certainly needs to be looked at, analyzed, and figure out what the heck's causing it. But I have no great confidence that that's going to happen. We're talking about countries continuing to accumulate gold: Singapore, Poland, China. Other countries that aren't announcing it are doing it. What can they know that the rest of us don't, John?
Well, you know, and the countries that are doing it tend to be not the ones who are hyperinflating their currencies. So it's an interesting symmetry there. The fact that central banks in general are now net buyers of gold is a very big inflection point that happened a couple of years ago and has steepened since then. That's a very big deal in the gold market, because for most of the time you and I have been playing around with precious metals, central banks have been net sellers. They've been dumping their gold. Now they're net buyers. And, you know, they're net buyers with unlimited credit cards, basically. So they can buy as much gold as they want to. So if we have investors and hedge funds and central banks all trying to get through that little tiny door that leads to precious metals at some point, it's going to be a sight to see. You know, it's going to be one of those parabolic charts that you live for when you're a speculator.
And finally, the move in cryptos. Bitcoin hit just under $54,000 on Sunday. Now it's back up to around 58 and change. This was after 2 weeks ago making new nominal all-time highs. So you got to wonder what's going on here, John.
Well, Bitcoin trades like a tech stock. I'm not saying it is a tech stock destined to drop by 90%, but it's a risk-on asset. It tanked on Friday along with tech stocks, and then it's recovering big time today along with tech stocks. You know, and gold, meanwhile, was kind of flat on Friday. It didn't do much of anything. And now with tech stocks going up, gold is going down today. So these are very different assets, even though both claim to be, you know, the future of sound money. And, you know, they both have a place. I assume people who understand what they're doing will make a lot of money in both asset classes, but they're not the same asset class. So they're not really direct competitors, I don't think. And I think as we, you know, broaden our understanding of cryptos vis-a-vis precious metals, we will kind of come to that conclusion that they're two different things that are basically on the same side of history, but they're not the same assets. So you use them for different things.
All right. Well, that is it for today. Make sure you go over, stop by dollarcollapse.com, sign up for your free newsletter, and you'll get John's latest ruminations on numerous different topics, especially the ones you've been listening to today. And if you got a question for John, myself, the email address is kl@carrylutz.com. We answer all. And finally, John, we'll talk to you in 2 weeks.
Okay. See you, Carrie.
Thanks for listening to Carrie Lutz's Financial Survival Network, your solution to today's trying times. For the latest, go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.